Hello and welcome to Natural Focus. My name is David Boag and this podcast is dedicated as a celebration of the natural world. Well, I think I've caught up with all my emails by now. Thanks to everybody for writing. Now, it's really good to hear from you. I've been sorting out pictures. The weather's been pretty raining and not very nice to be going out over the last few days, and so I've been spending a lot of time sorting out pictures, sorting out photographs, getting them into photographic libraries and that kind of thing. Been working through a lot of the African stuff. That's the thing about Africa. Whenever you go to Africa, you always take loads of photographs on a safari. Some of you would know that I lead safaris to Africa on a regular basis, and it is an absolute wonderful way to boost a number of photographs. It is so easy, the photography in Africa. It's a brilliant place. I have this expression that I use on occasions, and that is, if you're interested in natural history, don't die without having been on an African safari at least once. It's an amazing experience. Sure, you see loads of mammals. The mammals are absolutely brilliant, but there's masses of birds as well. And opportunities to get quite close to them. It really is an exciting place, and as I suggested, it's more than just the wildlife. It's a kind of experience in itself. It's a special thing, I think, a safari. It really is. So don't die then without going on a safari at least once, okay? A good safari. Hey, that's a point. Yeah, it's got to be a good safari, because there are some pretty naff ones as well. So perhaps you're wondering, what makes the difference between a good safari and a poor or an average safari? Well, I guess a lot of it is to do with timing. Don't hold back. If this is my advice, don't hold back on a safari and think, oh, well, I might not enjoy it. It might not be my thing. I'll just have a few days safari and the rest of the time I'll try to find a beach or something and have a beach holiday. So you have a week's safari and a week's beach holiday. Believe me, if you think you might be interested, you might enjoy it, you will enjoy it, okay? That's my experience anyway. And I tend to operate on whole fortnights, whole 2 weeks. You don't use the expression fortnight in America, do you? Haha, good point. I don't think you do anyway. Anyway, 2 weeks. I usually do a 2 week safari. What makes a difference? Well, timing. I think timing is of vital importance. It is so easy to think that these are certain locations that I'd like to visit, and you have the names of these places in your mind, and you discover that they are cheaper at one time of year than another, and you think, well, it's the same place, that'll be fine. But don't forget, in many parts of Africa, and I guess in my head I'm mainly referring to places like Kenya and Tanzania, they would be my key locations, and then of course you've got Zambia and Zimbabwe, Botswana and so on. But in places like Kenya and Tanzania, you have the rainy season, of course, and a lot of the game viewing in that area actually revolves quite heavily around the wildebeest. You need to know where the wildebeest are and where they've been, okay, to make a good safari. I'll explain that in just a second. The thing is, you see, as the clouds are moving around the Serengeti and the Masai Mara, and the Mara and the Serengeti are all joined together, as is the Ngorongoro region. That is a huge area. It is a huge area. And as the rainfall moves around that area, so too are the wildebeest. The point being is that the rains arrive, and as a result of the rains, there is a tremendous flush of growth. And the grass on the Serengeti or in the Mara, the grass can be, 3 feet high or more. Now, it's very, very difficult to actually find the big cats, for example, the lion, you know, lions even, as big as they are. It's very hard to see them in that high grass, as you can imagine. I mean, even elephants disappear. Well, maybe not quite, but you know what I mean. It is much harder game viewing in those circumstances. And so you really want to time it so that although after the rains have been, but after the wildebeest have been through the area as well, and just before the next rains. Because the effect of this enormous, colossal herd of wildebeest is to mow the vegetation down really short. It can be so short, it's just unbelievable. And then, of course, everything is revealed. nothing can hide. Although you think it can't hide, you'll be amazed how things can hide. It's brilliant. It's so exciting. And therefore, on that basis, I tend to go and lead safaris to Kenya around about sort of August time. Yeah. On the other hand, if I'm leading a safari to Tanzania, I tend to want to be at a specific place, a place actually called Ndutu. And I like to be there around about end of February, early mid-March, yeah? The reason I want to be there then is because the wildebeest will be in that area and they will be calving. And so that's the place to be at that time. It makes the world of difference between a good safari and a pretty average one. Point being, if you've managed to time it right for the wildebeest calving, you can imagine all of these calves of the wildebeest are dropped at around about the same time, within a few weeks, yeah? So you can picture the situation. You've got loads of baby calves and lots of afterbirth about and that kind of thing. So you can imagine, therefore, that the predators, the big cats in particular, of course, you can imagine, but the predators such as the lions and the cheetahs, hyena as well, leopard, a jackal, they're going to be active as well, very active in that area. And it kind of draws them in. And it makes for game viewing, makes for very exciting game viewing, I suppose. A lot of people say to me, well, they don't like the idea of that. And before I take people, they say, oh, I don't want to see anything killed. Well, I can understand that. And I'm not going to try to dismiss that as I talk to you now, except to say that actually you very rarely see a kill, in actual fact. Okay, I've seen only a few kills. Very few kills, comparative to the amount of time that I've spent there. And you can go on a whole fortnight safari or 2 week safari and not see a kill, that's for sure. But actually, I have had people with me that have said that, oh, they don't want to see anything horrible like a kill. But when you're there, I can't explain it. It isn't horrible. It becomes quite natural in some ways. Very much part of the environment. It's not as horrible as you might imagine. That's the only way I can explain it. It doesn't feel cruel. It doesn't feel bad. I don't know why. You can't always put things into words, can you? Especially things like feelings and attitudes and that kind of thing. The other thing is to, if you're involved with a safari, is that it's good, in my opinion anyway, to have to go with a group and have a leader. Why is that good? I don't mean a big group. I don't mean a group of sort of 20 or 30 or anything like that. Actually, I think probably about 12 is the best number. That's my opinion from experience. 12 is an excellent number. The reason being is that it's enough people to have a change of society so that you're not necessarily with the same people all the time, people that you probably haven't met until you went on safari. It's probably you're not going to necessarily be bosom friends with everybody, but there's some that you're going to get on well with. And so you have a choice if there's 12 people. If there are less, only about 6 or 8 people, then you're a little bit limited, if you like, in your change of society. If you have more people, then it just becomes a crowd, and you start losing individuals, you know, and some people can feel a bit left out and that kind of thing. So I believe 12 is quite a good number. But it's great to be able to share. I think one of the things as well about the safari is that, yeah, you probably go with your partner, your husband or your wife or your partner or something like that. Or you may. I mean, I take a lot of people that are singles. But in the evenings, when you're sitting around the table in the game lodges, wonderful atmosphere in many situations, but you're recounting all the things that you saw during the day. And it's brilliant to be able to share. It really is a great feeling. It's brilliant for me as well, taking people that have never been before. Can you imagine drawing up beside, a pride of lions or something or other, and you know that these people have never seen wild lions before? I'm really torn. Should I watch the lion or should I watch the person? Well, actually, I'm not torn. I watch the person. the expression and the excitement and the satisfaction on people's faces is brilliant. It's a real privilege, to be honest, to be able to take people. Hey, I've just realised I'm doing a really good advertising job here. I wasn't meaning to do it. I was going to tell you more about the birds and some of the funny moments and things that I'd had on a safari. But I'm kind of getting short of time already. Maybe I'd better do that on another occasion. I always reckon to do around about 10 minutes of 10 minutes twice a week, okay? And I've done my 10 minutes worth, you might say. And I don't really want to overstretch the time. I just want you to be fairly familiar with the format of around about 10 minutes worth, roughly, anyway. Hey, if I have done a good job of selling you a safari, that's wonderful. You can contact me, all right? If you want to come with me, they're not cheap, I have to admit. I mean, I do the best. I go for the upmarket end of the range. But if you want information, if you want to contact me, that's wonderful. Yeah, it'd be brilliant. Contact me, David, at naturalfocus.co.uk. David at naturalfocus, 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 all one word, .co.uk. Have a look at my website, which is obviously naturalfocus.co.uk. Okay, look forward to being with you again in a few days' time. Bye for now.